Welcome to Life's Issues with Lloyd Rosen, where the discussion will be about issues that affect people on a daily basis. Life's Issues is brought to you by the Tough Talk Radio Network. Now here's your host, Lloyd Rosen.
Welcome to another edition of Life's Issues with Lloyd Rosen. We have a great show for you today. I have a guest who has been an inspiration to a lot of people, more than I have time to talk about right now. But if you'd like to join us and listen to our guest, you can dial 347-989-1363. Press the number 1. You'll be put in the producer's queue to ask a question. If you are a Facebook fan, you can go to Tough Talk Radio Network, or you can go to Lloyd S. Rosen. Either way, you'll find us, and you'll be able to read up on us. You can email me a question if you find, after you listen to the show a second time, you have a question. Please go to Bowler, which is B-O-W-L-E-R 900, at sbcglobal.net, and you can ask me the question. I will be more than happy to get the answer back to you as fast as I can. If you want to become a guest on our show, like we have every week here, you can go to Life's Issues with LloydRosen.com. There is a link on there that says register to be a guest. You register to be a guest. The information goes right onto my schedule, and you pick the time and date that you'd like to be on, and we get you taken care of. You can also listen to the show there, or you can contact me through that website, Life's Issues with Lloyd Rosen. www.toughtalkradionetwork.com. You can learn all about the shows we have. We have about 8 or 9 shows right now. We're growing all the time. If you want to listen to our show after the fact, you can definitely do that. You can download it yourself, actually, onto your computer at iTunes and listen to it, ask questions through my email address, bowler900@sbcglobal.net. And you'll get your answers. This week, I have some great news about my personal book that I am getting republished. I just got the cover last night, and it looks fantastic. And the next move will be getting it to a publisher, and we'll be looking to release it sometime either late November or early December, just in time for the holiday season. And I know how the holiday season is very depressing for a lot of people, so maybe they can get some hope from reading my book, which will be out shortly. But as I said, right now we're going to take a timeout. We're going to take a commercial break, and we'll be right back with our first guest. Welcome back to Life's Issues with Lloyd Rosen. We are here today. We have one guest for the full hour. She is a total inspiration to me, and hopefully by the time we're done today, she'll be an inspiration to you. She was born in the horse country of Lexington, Kentucky. She relocated to the heat of Florida, and then after having enough of the hot weather, she moved to Vermont and finally settled in the seacoast of New Hampshire. She has been one of those people who has been a volunteer for basically her whole life. At the age of 4, she had already begun to save food to help the local Salvation Army feed the long lines of people that she saw when she was growing up in the early 1980s. She also grew up and began to volunteer for various organizations. In high school, for example, she was a juvenile court system. She was in the juvenile court system as a peer advocate for foster youth. She has been a big sister to many children in her college years. She has continued to help people. She continues to learn. She's gotten into martial arts. She is a life coach. She is a business owner. She is an author of 2 books, and as she told me off the air, 2 more to come. Plus, she has 2 radio shows that she does, and we're going to get right into it and invite Rusty McDonald in to talk. Rusty, how are you?
I'm groovy. How are you?
I'm fantastic, and thank you for joining us on this Thursday afternoon to talk about your inspiration, which just reading your bio is incredible to me.
I'm exhausted listening to it. I was thinking, going, really? I did all of that?
Well, you know, it's very interesting because you personally probably don't look at it that way, but I've got basically two pages of stuff that you've done. So you are an inspiration to anybody who would read this bio, and you should be proud of it. So
thank you.
You're welcome. You have, as we were talking off the air, you have two books that are out now. You've been invited to write two more books. Tell us about the titles and what each book talks about.
Oh, my gosh. It's been a whirlwind. I think this year has definitely been the year of planting, and next year is the year of harvest. So everything that all of the hard work, all of the countless hours of growing and creating and making this work has started, the fruits are starting to blossom on the tree. So I'm very grateful and honored, and it's been amazing. My first book, which is my biography, is Having Tea with My Skeletons, and that is a very personal journey. I expose every aspect of my life in a very compassionate and humorous and as many places as I can way in regards to abuse, from rape to physical abuse, mental abuse, poverty, and a bad marriage. And then we have been trying to move back to Florida, and there's been a lot of issues in the state of New Hampshire with allowing people to relocate, mostly women, it seems. So I am finishing my book, Pride and Prejudice, A Relocation Nightmare, and it's going to outline all of the errors that happened in my case. And there was discrimination. It was very inappropriate. The judge was mocking me. So I'm just waiting for the court transcripts, and that will be published in January. And then I was invited to be to submit my story to a book that's coming out in January as well. January is like this big month for me. It's crazy. It's called Tainted Elegance, Simply Beautiful, Scars and Flaws, Rises and Falls. And that project is released in January as well. And then 2 days ago, there is another anthology of women's voices that will be published, I believe, December, because we're trying to get it out for the holidays. It's going to be a series of women who have inspired, motivated, survived, and thrived in their various adversities, and they're going to be sharing that story in its collective. So, you know, that was a huge honor as well to be able to participate in that.
Let me. First of all, let's go back for a second, and I got to ask a question.
Yes, I have lots of gray hair.
No. You have some skeletons, but we're not gonna delve too deeply into them. I'm more curious because I'm an analytical kind of person, and I'm very curious as to how the state of New Hampshire can stop anybody of their freedom to move out of the state of New Hampshire and go back to Florida.
Well, they have this law called the best interest. And because, so basically, and as you read the testimonies of all three court hearings, basically what transpired is my ex-husband refuses to cooperate on any level. He absolutely adamantly refuses. And because of that refusal, we cannot move because it would not be in the best interest of my daughter, because he will make it difficult for the transporting back and forth. So that leaves us without family. That leaves us without friends, because all of our family and friends are down there. And so we have absolutely zero supports, zero resources here in New Hampshire. And that's in the best interest of my daughter.
Okay. Which makes sense, because when I lived in Texas, as I was telling you earlier, I did for 10 years. One of my supervisors, one of my bosses, was dating, or was actually married to a woman. He wasn't dating her. He was married to her. And she had two or three daughters with another husband. And he got a job in Ohio, and he had to get approval from the father of the children to take them out of state back to Ohio so he could take the job. So I see the point. It's the same scenario. And unfortunately, in your case, you have not had a cooperative ex-husband that is willing to think of the best interest of the children instead of himself, which is
correct. And that drips throughout all the entire transcript of both trials that we had on it, it just oozes that this was not about her. And unfortunately, they made a big deal that I was adopted, and that adoption is an issue because that's not blood family, and only blood family counts. I mean, it was that bad. So the book is going to be juicy. It's going to be an eye-opener, and hopefully it'll change the laws, because unfortunately, his inability to cooperate, we shouldn't be penalized for. And I even asked, if he robs a bank, are we going to jail for that?
You know, I'm just sitting here. I'm floored because now you yourself are adopted. So now
Correct.
They're using. So now they're using. They
use that against me.
Adoption.
Yep.
Against you.
Yep.
I'm baffled. I'm really baffled because.
Wait until you read the book. It's just disgusting. It's a complete abuse of power.
Well, isn't that what our government is all about? I'm sorry, I won't go there. I didn't say that on the air, did I? But
no, I didn't hear it.
Really? So I'm trying to figure this whole thing out. So you've written the two books. The two other ones are coming out. Now tell us a little bit about the radio shows. Are they an inspirational asset as well?
Well, there's two. My Living and Thriving series was formatted based on a dream. Here I am, a full-time single mom with no support. Now, that's a huge issue, but, you know, we've already delved into why. And
mm-hmm.
I love what I do. I love talking. I love meeting people. I love learning. I love sharing stories and inspiring people to grow. And how do I get myself out cosmically in kind of a restrained situation? So I woke up and I'm like, I used to DJ in college. What fun. Why can I not do something like that? There's got to be technology. And so Living and Thriving was born 18 months ago, and I had four of my best friends listening in. And now I have over 300,000 best friends listening in. So that's been a remarkable, amazing journey. It's very humbling. I have guests lined up until August of next year. And so we're currently looking for sponsorship because I'd like to be able to do a show a day because we have that many guests on an international level, which is amazing. In the beginning of December, I'm interviewing a fellow out of India who is a motivational speaker, and he's got a beautiful story, but technology brought us together, and that's been wonderful. During the time of my divorce, I ended up hiring a bodyguard, and in that process, the bodyguard and I became really good friends, and he is a private investigator as well, and he wants to do a radio show about private investigation, and so every Monday night, we host an hour-long radio show called Ask a PI. So that's all tips, tricks, and security-related conversations and how to protect yourself, especially with social media. So that's been fun. That's been an adventure in itself. And I'm looking at 2015 to do a public access TV series, interviewing people live that are local. But we'll see if that works out.
This is so ironic. You were on my schedule to be on my show this week, and I didn't know a whole lot about you until I pulled your biography up and read about the fact that you have the two books and the two radio stations. And I was telling you off the air, I lived in I moved from New Jersey when I was in my young 20s and went to Seattle. And it was mm-hmm. in Seattle where I actually got a PI license, was a PI, had my own PI company, which unfortunately I didn't do correctly, so it didn't really flourish the way it could have. But
right.
I did have it, and at any given time, I probably could go back to Washington State and take the test again and become a private investigator again, because I am an extremely, like I was saying analytical person, and everything is a mystery to me. It's why, you know? And
right.
Let's solve the mystery. So maybe I'll have to look up. Now, FPI, is that on Blog Talk Radio?
It is. It is. So it's blogtalkradio.com/askapi. And I just finishing up our website now, so.
I'll have to get on and call in one night and talk to him about being a private investigator, because I'm not a bodyguard. I'm not an police officer. I'm just a little guy who thought that being a private investigator would be kind of cool, which it would be. So my uncle is a very well-known private investigator, retired here in New Jersey. So I've been involved in this kind of stuff for a long time. But let's get into I will tell you right up front, if I touch a subject that you don't want to personally go in that direction, tell me. We'll move to a another direction.
That's fine.
Now, you told me earlier that you were, in your childhood, you were abused and so forth and so on. Explain to me how you were abused when at the age of 4, you had already begun to save food to help the local Salvation Army. That doesn't sound like something that was instilled into a child who was abused, or had you not been abused yet?
I was severely abused at that time. I was severely neglected as well. I don't think I was born to be any other way. And that's the key. That's the difference that people don't seem to always acknowledge. I think we're born with certain gifts, certain desires, certain abilities, and what was happening in my environment was common every day, that I didn't know anything different. So the way I grew up in this very toxic, hostile environment and married into the same, I still had the compassion, I still had the desire to help other people, and I could still feel empathy for other people's needs over my own. And that's just who I am. That's the way God made me. I think I ponder, I'll say, I do ponder, if I did not go through such severe adversity, would I be the same compassionate individual that I am? I don't know. I can't answer that. And frankly, I don't want to find out. I really like the way my life has evolved. And like I was telling you earlier, I'm not any smarter, but I am. And I'm not less complex, but I am. And at this point in my life, I'm really indulging and enjoying the fact that you can get through whatever it is, as long as you focus and put one foot in front of the other, because that's all you can do.
Well said. I'm sitting here listening to your story, and I know, like I said earlier to you, this interview is all about you and all about your books and your history. But I will have to interject. When I reached the age of 13, became a teenager, I had a chemical imbalance in my brain and ended up suffering with depression for 36 years until I got healthy at the age of 49. In that time, I didn't know any different. I thought everybody lived this way, so I thought it was normal until I found out that it wasn't normal. And I think what I'm trying to get at is not so much about me, but getting back to your story, I think that a lot of people who suffer with some sort of trauma, in your case, abuse, in my case, it was abuse and depression emotional abuse. My father called me things like idiot, stupid, dumb, moron.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So I've been there. I think we probably walked the same path in some ways. But I have to say I want to tell you that I think in my own mind that going through this stuff, and when we come out on the other end, we are better people because of it. And we have to go through it to become better people, because I know people who have not gone through it, and they live this blah, blah, life that they think they can overcome anything and everything, and they haven't even had the situations you're talking about or I'm talking about. So I think that you have to go through them, and you're a better person for going through them. So I think you need to think more on that level so you don't beat yourself up that much about having to go through what you went through. You took up, in 2000, you took up martial arts. Was it just for something saying, I want to try it, it's a bucket list thing of mine? What made you do martial arts as a protection?
I am a little bit of a tomboy, and the martial arts was meant to really develop my body and to develop my mind and utilize more of the Asian thinking, especially when it comes to spirituality. It was also the time when my marriage was really going down. It was the Titanic. And I wanted to empower myself and empower the inner me that was having a hard time being public. And so I started with martial arts. I ended up as a blue belt in Ishinryu. And I have taken a few years off for obvious reasons, and I'm crazy busy right now. But in college, I fenced, and I love fencing. I love martial arts. I love the mental training and the physical requirements. And it's a nice balance. It's a nice way to de-stress, I think.
Also something you can use when you go out on a first date.
Don't
mess with me. Don't worry about my dad. Don't worry about my brothers. Worry about me.
Guys, actually, believe it or not, you know, they will look at a movie with a Tarantino movie with Uma Thurman who's chopping somebody's head off or whatever, and they'll say, oh, she's hot. But when it comes to dating somebody who has that ability, they're not so comfortable. It's really an interesting dichotomy that we are.
it's a very interesting thing because I myself, in my dating situation, personally, I can't stand a submissive woman. I need a woman
right.
who's going to be strong and give me a fight for my money and be able to talk about things and maybe even argue about things. So
right.
Let's just use you as an example. If I was to date you, I'd probably have an adrenaline rush the whole date just because I think, you know.
Right.
That's just me. I mean, we're just those kind of people. We enjoy adventure and danger. Like going back to my PI life, I followed a guy 50 miles from his home to a movie theater, sat outside the movie theater and waited for him to come out just to follow him back home 50 more miles for a 100-mile round trip, and not knowing if he was ever going to see me or if he did see me because he stopped for gas and I had to hide. And so, yeah, adventure is a way of life. Now, going back again, you're an inspirational person. You helped the Salvation Army. You helped various organizations in high school, college. You were a big sister. When did you realize in your life that all these things were not just something that was taking up time, but something that you may have been put on this earth to do? Was it in
when
high school?
When I almost died.
College?
No, it was 6 weeks after my daughter was born. So I fell very, very ill. And at first it was very typical gallbladder issues. It's very common for women who get pregnant, their gallbladders don't always react nicely. And I was very, very sick with that. They removed the gallbladder, just a very basic surgery. They do it laparoscopically now, which is nice. You don't have a huge scar like back in the old days. Yep, just three little holes. And unfortunately, when they pulled the gallbladder out, it dropped some stones in the bile duct, which we did not know until about 24 hours later when I was completely septic and I had 72 hours to live. Boom. You want to talk about having the rug pulled off from under you. You know, here's this little girl who I've wanted my whole entire life, who I was told I would never have. I was diagnosed with unexplainable infertility. And all of a sudden she arrives. And 6 weeks later, I'm going to die.
That's
pretty powerful.
Yeah.
Pretty powerful.
That is powerful. It makes you really believe in a higher power and the reasons that you were born and put on this earth. I'll tell you, it really does.
You really dig deeply, and the way my ex-husband reacted during that, and he was arguing with me in front of the doctor, and he was very inconvenienced that I was sick, and he had to take care of the girls, and, you know, that really showed and demonstrated to me what kind of relationship I was in. And I had to really dig deep and find strength to get through it, and I was alone. There was no support. And so I had to spend some really good quality time with myself. And it was very, very sick. And I had a choice. That was my chance out. That was my total chance to die. I could have died right there. And I didn't. I'm a fighter. I couldn't do it. So I knew I had to make some changes in my life. And that was really the pivotal time when I realized that my life is pretty powerful, and the things that I've accomplished and the stuff that I've gone through, and yet I still smile and crack a joke and my license plate is happy. You know, there's a reason why I'm here. And I think it's to share my story.
No, it's an incredible story, Rusty. I'm just sitting here thinking to myself that, you know, you said that on this deathbed of yours, or whatever you want to consider it, you had some choices to make, and you had some life experiences that you lived through that you knew were messages to tell you that you had some changes to make. And the first one, if you don't mind me saying, was to get rid of him.
Yep. Yep.
And you had this, and you had the strength to do it, and you have forged forward, and you are you're a better person yourself for it. Your kids are better kids for it. And the people in this world who you have helped are better for it. So think of it that way. Think of what you've done that has bettered the world by you doing it. So let me have you give my listeners at this time some information about where they can find your books and where they can find you and get in touch with you if they like. And then we're going to take another break and come back for the second half hour.
All right, groovy. Well, my name is Rusty, R-U-S-T-I-E, and you can find me at Rusty, R-U-S-T-I-E, MacDonald.com. And all of my contact information and radio show and blog and everything is located right there on that beautiful little website. And I look forward to meeting you and chatting a little bit more.
Okay. We'll be right back after these messages for another half hour with Rusty. So stand by. Welcome back to the second half hour of Life's Issues with Lloyd Rosen. I am your host, Lloyd Rosen, and we have spent the first half hour talking with Rusty MacDonald, who is an author, an inspirational speaker, a radio host, and a lot more things that I just can't get into. But what I'd like to get into, is a disease that you contracted or got somehow in 2006. I've never heard of this disease, so tell our listeners and me, fill us in on what kind of disease this is.
Well, celiac disease is an autoimmune disorder. I'm allergic to wheat, rye, and barley, so my life is gluten-free.
So you're basically allergic to certain foods.
Yep, it's a food allergy. It's an autoimmune deficiency like lupus or MS. Or if I continue to eat products that would have wheat, rye, or barley in it, I will slowly kill myself. And I'm good. I'm not going to do that.
I'm not laughing at you, Rusty. I'm laughing. No. I got to tell you the story. You'll laugh with me when you hear the story. The young lady who I'm dating right now, she is highly, highly allergic to nuts.
Is she anaphylactic?
She went to a Cheesecake Factory one night to have dinner with her daughter, and they hadn't even brought anything. The table somehow had peanuts on it at a previous time and place, and nobody washed the table correctly. Her face blew up. She spent four hours in the hospital after her daughter rushed her to the hospital. So having said that, okay, we're at the store one night, and I, about 2 years ago, was diagnosed as a diabetic. So she's real careful about buying stuff that has low sugar, low carbs for me, and I'm real careful about making sure that we don't buy a whole lot of nuts so she doesn't accidentally get an attack. So we're at the store, and she's looking at the marshmallows, and she says, Lloyd, how many carbs and sugars does this marshmallows have? And I said, well, the carbs are like 18 grams, and the sugar is like 10 grams or something. She goes, oh, no. And she puts it back on the counter, back on the shelf. And I said, why don't you buy them? That way you have them just in case you really would like to kill me. You could, keep them handy. And she said, no, I don't think so. I said, well, don't worry about it, because if you really want to get cute about it, I'll take a peanut and stick it in the middle of the marshmallow and give you the marshmallow. So we play with each other back and forth. I mean, that might not sound funny to a lot of people, but it's just the way we are give and take. We make light of issues that are in our life so we don't get so encompassed by it and let it take over our life.
Well, and I think there should be a certain level of brevity, but I think there should be a certain level of humor. We, as a culture and as a species, take things so out of context, blow it out of proportion in such a way that it's almost unbearable. We are a very happy society now. We're very cold, disconnected. And, even look at relationships. Going out dating again, it's been crazy because it's so disconnected. There's not an emotionality anymore. It's what's in it for me.
No, you're absolutely right. I like I told you earlier, I'm 58 years old. My son he's 24 now. He can text faster than I can turn the phone on. Okay, he's just that good. Okay, my girlfriend's daughter will actually call her on the phone, and she's in the next room. Technology has taken away the personal side of relationships, and it's not a good thing for our society. It's not a good thing for us as human beings, because you've got a whole generation of kids that do not know how to communicate, and it's a normal practice today for the kids to break up with their girlfriends or boyfriends via a text message.
I just want to reel it back a little bit, and hopefully this doesn't offend you, but I think technology is a bittersweet, beautiful thing, just like I think people are bittersweet and beautiful. We're walking dichotomies. We're complex and we're simple and we're hypocrites. And that's what makes people and humans, being human, a delicious treat. Now, technology brought you and I together tonight.
You're breaking up just a little bit.
Can you hear me now?
A little bit better.
Okay. Technology has brought us together, which is beautiful because we get to share our lives with each other in this hour format, and yet we're several hundred miles apart. So technology, yes, can be a cruel, overused, misunderstood entity, But that's based on the human.
No, I see your, I see your point. I see your point, and I do see, and I'm not, you know, listen, don't get me wrong. I didn't get offended by what you said because I understand technology as a necessary evil in this society that we live in today. It's made our world a better place. It's made our world an easier place to live, but it's also caused some issues.
Because of our irresponsibility as users of said tool, and it's our ownership, it's our irresponsibility, our fear of taking, it's our insecurity.
It's like I said, it's a necessary evil that has its drawbacks, like everything else. I mean, I bet you we can name things right out of the gate. Of things that made the world a better place, but it had its negative effects too, because everything has a positive and a negative. Everything has an action and a reaction. So I understand
the causality. Absolutely. But I love it. I think in a lot of ways, if, you know, utilizing our formats the way that we do by educating and sharing stories and having these conversations and allowing other people to dive into our personal space that way, I really believe, honestly, that it re-energizes people's thinking and allows them to be more cognizant about their behaviors.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely.
Sorry, did I throw you off?
No.
I do that.
So, you, in your biography here, you say that you're a life coach and a business owner. You've been a coach for more than 10 years. You have two children, and you have a BA in psychology. How has psychology helped you in the realm of dealing with a husband who turned out not to be the right man for you? I mean, did your psychology help you recognize the things that he was doing to you that was not good?
No, it actually, and I have to say that, you know, coming from lived in severe poverty, severe abuse, drug addiction around me, living on the streets, I had cancer twice, pre-cancer, I will rephrase that, and what I thought I was going to be when I growed up, so to speak, was a hero. I thought I was going to go and help everybody and save everybody and make everybody's world better. And while my fantasy world, my delusions of grandeur, that I'm going to rescue everybody because, you know, everybody just needs to be loved. That's it. They need to be you need to prove that you actually love them, and then they will heal. Amen. That was my theory. I'm not kidding. So here I thought in this dysfunctional relationship, and yet another one, again, part of that I didn't realize was completely dysfunctional because, well, I didn't know any better. I was always in an environment of dysfunction. I was always in an environment where the men abuse the women. I mean, this is ancestral lineage. It's in our DNA, in my bloodline. The men were always abusers. So being disrespected and demeaned and demoralized by my ex-husband and boyfriend was normal. I thought that's the way it was supposed to be. But here I am with a psychology degree, and I'm going to save you, and I'm going to make you a nicer person, and I'm going to take that lion and make it sweet. Didn't work. So it really was a pivotal moment when I realized that the psychology was for me. The psychology was for me to heal.
Exactly. And God works in mysterious ways, and you sometimes never figure out why he's making you go to school and get a BA in psychology. Just like you said, you thought you were going to go help the world, and it actually was because he wanted you to help yourself. So,
right.
Now, tell me about this great sales and marketing job that you have for a company in Belgium. You traveled internationally to Belgium.
What an honor. Here I am, little orphan Annie, you know, was a foster kid, lived on the street, clunky, diamond in the rough, chip on the shoulder, quick wit, I'm funny as hell, but here's this company that's like, hey, you want to fly out to Belgium and open up an office in the U.S. for us? I'm like, where's Belgium? Sure. You know, just this naive, sweet little girl and going off to a foreign country. I mean, really, I never imagined, like I'd always fantasized about doing such a thing, but never thought I'd ever have the resources or the opportunity. And here it was, and it was beautiful and spectacular and amazing. And for the first time in my life, I actually felt short.
You actually felt good about yourself.
Well, I felt good about myself. I was very proud, and my inner megalomania blew it all up and ruined it 5 years later. But I was able to travel back and forth from Belgium. I got to see Amsterdam. I got to ride on a train from Amsterdam to Antwerp, and while the bulbs were blooming in the field, you want to talk about a spectacular, God was holding my hand that whole entire trip. It was so amazing. I had tears in my eyes, the beauty of the colors just rolling by. It was amazing. I got to meet Hare Krishnas. I got to go to France. So I got to kayak in the Ardennes, and here I am, just little orphan Annie who's undereducated. That within itself inspired more hunger, more desire to be bigger. And in the sense, not bigger as in famous or bigger as in pompous, but more educated, more compassionate, more loving, more dedicated to understanding the world versus my little neighborhood, which caused a lot of problems in my marriage because he is not a traveler.
Oh, yeah. You really married the right guy there.
I really did. I did a great job. Thank you.
No. So here's the question I have for you, not so much about being the sales and marketing person that you were in Belgium and bringing that company to fruition here in the States, but how did the people, the societies that were in Europe at the time that you were there, how did they match up to the people and the issues that you ran into here in the United States from your inspirational side, you're wanting to fix the world? Did you see Europe as more of a problem that they had or less of a problem that we had more of the problem?
We absolutely had more of a problem. And mind you, this was pre-9/11 into 9/11. So we have, you know, what was that mad cow disease? Oh, Lord, I remember. Here's my perspective, right, wrong, or indifferent. It's just my perspective as to my experiences going overseas. You go overseas, they're very polite. They're very kind. They're very giving. They're conversationalists. They're wonderful. It's beautiful. There's a certain naivety to it, and it's exciting. You come back to the United States, and the first thing you're greeted with is a military man. So for me, walking into Paris at 2 o'clock in the morning, at the Paris airport at 2 o'clock in the morning, and you see all these no smoking signs, and yet they're still smoking there, and just having my passport stamped and walking through, and then the flight back having to meet military, that spoke volumes to me about the kind of country we've become, or that I did not realize we were. In regards to social needs, we are horrible. We're a nightmare. We are a joke when it comes to treatment of our people. Whether it's veterans, poor people, doesn't matter. We're a joke. We are disrespectful as a country to our people. And it's amazing to me in Europe, it's a non-issue. They take care of their people. And they look at us with grotesque eyes, because we do not respect our people. We don't take care of our communities. And here's an example. Recently, there's a young man of 98 years named Arnold Abbott in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. He has been arrested 3 times over the last 2 weeks for feeding the homeless. Yeah, which he's done for years and years and years. But for whatever reason, Fort Lauderdale decided to ban that and make it illegal to feed the homeless. Wow. That speaks volumes about the culture and the society and what kind of people we've turned into. I mean, we're not even going to help the poor. That's scummy. So, you know, and even bigger than that for me, I look at the mayor who continues to have this 98-year-old man arrested. Like, he's going to stop. What is he going to lose? You can arrest him another 100 times. He's going to keep doing it because he believes in it. It's his passion, and it's the right thing to do. And this mayor keeps having him arrested, and I'm sitting here going, these are your voters. This is your community. These are your people that you're preventing help because of what? There's no logic. That's my rampage. I'm over.
No. This is what the forum is for. It's life issues and getting the word out to people. I mean, I have read the issue on the internet. I have read where he continues to do it, and like you said, he will continue to do it because he just doesn't know any other way to do what he's supposed to be doing on this earth. And at 98 years old, I'm sorry, but, you know.
Leave him alone. Let him do his thing. Leave him alone. But he's not doing any harm to anybody. You know, it's not like he's out doing pornography or shooting kids or developing a new honey boo-boo. You know, I mean, really, this is where our society has gone, and it drives me crazy because I have a 9-year-old daughter, and I'm sitting here going, no, I refuse to allow you to be apathetic to your people. I refuse. I show her every aspect of life. I took her last year to South Beach for Thanksgiving. And in that, one of our biggest pet peeves is people who have their stores open on Thanksgiving or on a holiday. Family time is very, very important, and that's the way I raise my children. I want them to understand that family is very, very important. And so we're walking through South Beach, and I wanted her to understand where I grew up, the environment that I grew up in, you know, and the hypocrisies of the world. And this is real stuff. So it's Thanksgiving Day. We're walking down South Beach. And mind you, all of the hip-hop songs are all about, you know, hanging out in South Beach. It's where the rich people are, blah, blah, blah. And there are very personal items on the beach that I won't name publicly, but not appropriate things to have on one of the fanciest beaches in the country, right?
Right.
And there are homeless people walking through the plaza on Thanksgiving, where there are rich people sitting in the middle of the plaza having gourmet meals, totally ignoring the people that are homeless. My daughter was mortified. She did not even want to be there. We were there for about 45 minutes, and she's like, I'm out of here, Mom. This is gross. I don't want to be like that.
Yeah, we're winding down in terms of time,
yeah.
but here's my question to you.
Sure.
And I ask this on a number of other shows that I do with people. Do you believe in your heart and your mind that a major issue that this country is dealing with and having problems with homelessness and with feeding the hungry and the stuff like that is because the fact that we as a country are capitalistic, which breeds greed?
I believe that the reason why we have this dysfunctional country is because we have become so insecure that we need things over people. We have terrified each other with all of these paranoid delusions that your neighbor is going to sleep with your wife and all of these crazy ideas and all of these really bad reality TV shows. You know, that just feeds the desire not to be involved. We have become a too happy country, and that terrifies people to try to help. You know, if I hand you a sandwich and you get sick, you're going to sue me. I mean, we see it all the time. We see how people take advantage, and it's a disgrace. But I think that has a lot to do with education. And I think that has a lot to do with people not being involved in their communities. There was a time where you went to church every Sunday. Church wasn't just about the gospel. Church was about the community. That's where you would network. That's where you would learn how to raise your child. It takes a village. So, you know, we don't do that anymore.
No, we don't do it anymore. And, you know, it's like, it goes back to the old adage that I used to tell people and I still tell my kids today. If I was at a friend's house and I did something wrong, I didn't necessarily have to wait until I got home to get the whooping from my father. I got it from my friend's dad first, even if it was verbal. He gave it to me verbally, and then my father gave it to me verbally and physically and any way else that he wanted to, because that was my father. But, our country has gone a long way in the wrong direction, and that's the only way that I'm going to put it. I can go a lot more, but I'm not going to. It's gone a long way in the wrong direction. So,
but that's different, Chad. We could keep going at this for a while.
This conversation has been extremely interesting to me to hear, you know, your side of it, because I am the kind of host who loves to talk and will not judge my guests' opinions, but possibly even look at them and say, you know what, I never thought of it that way. Yeah, she's got a point. Or maybe she's too liberal for me, and I still believe that way, but I understand where she's coming from. So let me have you give my listeners your information one more time.
Great. You can reach me at Rusty, R-U-S-T-I-E, MacDonald, M-A-C, capital D-O-N-A-L-D, .com. And that's where my radio shows are listed, my blogs, my books, and everything you can possibly imagine.
Great. I want to thank you for coming on for the hour. I definitely will be in touch with you. Your inspiration and what you do has triggered some things in my mind as far as I have a friend who wants to start something and I want to run it past you. So we will definitely be in touch about what she wants to do, and maybe you
Great.
Can give her some insight. But until we do talk again, I thank you for coming on. I thank you for sharing your hour of insight, humor, and anything else that you gave us in this hour of fun and frolic.
Thank you so much. I'm very grateful to you and your audience for spending an hour hanging out and chatting. I'm grateful.
Hey,
thank you.
You're welcome. And keep up the work as far as inspiring everybody, no matter what age they are.
Thank you. Have a great night.
All right. You too, Rusty. Thank you for coming on. We'll be right back after these messages. Welcome back to Life's Issues with Lloyd Rosen. We are winding down this week's edition with Rusty MacDonald. We just said thank you and goodbye to her for her inspiration and her knowledge in making this world a better place. As I said earlier, my book is moving along. I know you people are probably sick and tired of hearing about when my book's going to come out, so I will not say anything more until I have a date as to when it's going to come out so you all can get a copy. The title of it is going to be Resurrection from Depression. It's a story of my life. Like Rusty was saying, she wrote a book about her life. I wrote a book about my life. And just so you all know, my producer, Tony Gambone, has just released Tuesday, it released on Tuesday, his newest book called From Las Vegas to the Promised Land. It's a book I definitely believe you should pick up and get. It's a book that will teach you about trials and tribulations that he had in becoming the man that he is today, with two death sentences and getting through it. If you're interested in looking it up, you can go to From Las Vegas to the Promised Land.com, or you can get the book on Amazon and take a look at it. Until next time, remember, you are one person in this world, but you may be the world to one person, and that one person that you are the world to may be the person that life is saved because you opened up to them and shared your information, just like my guests do week in and week out on the show. So until next time, we wish you a good weekend, a good week, and we will see you next time. Take care. I just spoke.